inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
If you're brand new to owning rental properties and you're trying to figure out how to buy your first rental property, I put together a free ebook that walks you through the five-step process to buy your first rental. You can download it for free right now. Just go to landlordgift.com. I've got a real interesting show today. Pete Barrow from Indianapolis is joining us on the podcast. Pete had always wanted to buy rental properties, but he lived in an expensive area and it just didn't make sense to buy rentals. A couple of years ago, his sons moved out to Indianapolis, and when he saw how cheap the rental properties were, he thought that this might be a big opportunity to get started in buying rentals. So he's been at it for a few years, and he's managed to put together a pretty good-sized portfolio. So we're going to check in with him, see how he did it, and see how things are going. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 60 seconds, and we'll talk to Pete. Whether you want to buy your first rental or you're an experienced investor, you probably already know that having someone on your team to help you finance a property is one of the most important things that you can do as an investor. Chailey Ridge has helped thousands of investors generate rental income by getting the right financing in place for their unique situation. She's an experienced investor herself, as well as an expert on financing rentals. See what she can do for you. Find out more today at RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Pete, welcome to the podcast. So why don't we start with you telling us what got you first interested in buying rental properties?
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me. Well, I was a carpenter for 100 years. Well, actually about 35 back on the East Coast. And I always sort of daydreamed about it, but it's just so expensive there. And then when my older son moved out to the Midwest, we're in Indianapolis now, and told me what you could get out here for a few bucks, we both realized that was our opportunity to do this. And one after another, my older son, Sam, my younger son, Isaac, and I all moved out here.
So did you, when you were living on the East Coast, did you ever think about buying rentals, or was it just that it was so much more affordable in Indianapolis that it made more sense?
I thought about it a lot, but I never got anywhere with that thought because, the simplest little bungalow is, well, now it's, half $1 million.
Sure. Sure. So yeah, it just doesn't make sense for a rental. Yeah.
The rental numbers didn't make sense to me.
So your sons moved out to Indianapolis. Did they start buying real estate when they got out there, or did you start buying when you got out there?
Well, my older son, Sam, who was the first to move out here, he moved out here and spent a month just studying the real estate and found a really great deal on a beautiful place. And I flew out to inspect it. And that was our first property here. That was just his house to live in. That was 5 years
ago. So
he found a foreclosure after that, and we just rolled from there.
So when you found that foreclosure, that's when like the light bulb kind of went off that, hey, this house is really cheap. We can rent this out and make some money on it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We just went from one to the next, and then we got very lucky. An old carpentry customer of mine back on the East Coast offered to put up some money. Sam found a big package deal of beautiful duplexes. We got them. And then over the next year, we bought most of them back from my friend. So
you took a huge risk because, I mean, you had a job on the East Coast. And when you moved, did you have a job when you got to Indianapolis, or were you thinking we're just going to make a go of it with real estate?
Well, I was always self-employed, so it was always a little bit of a risk. And I sold my tiny little bungalow there for enough money to, either retire on or buy a bunch of houses out here.
Okay. Okay. So you had some seed money to get started with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
I wasn't too worried.
Yeah. And how old were you when you moved? when you moved to Indianapolis? Well,
I guess I would have been 62. It was right around my birthday.
Okay.
60,
okay.
Turning 62.
Okay.
That was a year ago.
Now, so tell me about your business today. Like, how many units do you have? What is your rental portfolio look like today?
Well, we may or may not be getting another one today, so I don't know an exact number, but it's 42, 43 units.
Awesome.
A lot of those are duplexes. That's part of what we do, and we also have a very busy wholesaling business.
Okay. And so you've managed to put those units together in how many years?
Well, the first of those houses, like I said, was 5 years ago, and then a couple more, but really most of it's happened in the last 2 years.
Okay.
Because of that.
That's really incredible.
Started with that big package deal.
Yeah. So you had a couple of properties, but then you found a big package. What was it, like a landlord that was looking to get out of the business, that was looking to unload a portfolio?
Yes, it was a landlord who wanted to shed some stuff. And like I said, I had an old friend, customer who liked what we were doing and wanted to get into it. But after a year, decided that real estate really wasn't as passive an investment as they thought. And we bought the stuff back from them.
So okay.
That worked out. And he still made a lot of money. So that worked out well for everybody.
And tell me what it was like moving to a new city. So, I mean, Indianapolis was a brand new market for you. You had to kind of figure out what the good areas were, what the bad areas were. Like, what can you walk me through the process of what it was like deciding where you wanted to buy?
Well, Sam, like I said, both of my sons, because of the wholesaling in particular, they know the city, you know, street.
Okay.
There are a lot of streets where, you know, they can just tell you from block to block what happens in every house on the street. Since I've been here, I've been so busy working on our portfolio, I haven't learned the areas like they have. But, you know, the city is it's laid out simply. There's a lot of open space. It's not that hard to figure out where you want to be. And we can't afford to buy right in the middle of primo locations. We're trying to buy right on the edge, you know, right on the fringe of really nice areas, or
okay,
areas that are coming up, or between two really nice areas. And we've been very lucky. We've got cheap, good stuff that's appreciating and rents well. It's so far, it's all good.
Now, when you buy property, so I assume you're fixing them up with your background as a carpenter. So can you walk me through? Are you looking for like the most beat up, rundown property that you can fix up?
Well, we sort of live like rodents, you know, we'll eat whatever drops on the floor. and we bought everything from the last three things we bought. We bought a hoarder house, which needed everything. We bought a little old lady house, which is actually very good, but, you know, cosmetically ugly. And what we might be getting today is a house that's just almost pristine, but the woman just wants out, wants to sell, wants cash.
Okay.
So we'll buy whatever. We're more interested in where it is, I guess. There's got to be something to really recommend it about the location and the numbers.
So you've got like a real family business today. So your two sons are helping you out. How do you divide the work in managing the rentals?
I don't think they'd want to hear that they're helping me out. this is actually kind of their creation, and
you kind of taking it over.
I'm glad to be part of it. The way it works is that Sam, the older son, is the sort of the evil genius who paces the floor and thinks and comes up with ideas, and he's also a wizard about financing. Isaac, who you spoke to, I believe, knows does the management and the day to day stuff, and deals with the buyers and sellers for the wholesaling. What I've been doing is just working on the houses, but I'm starting to be the guy who goes out and inspects the houses that we're thinking about buying for the wholesaling business.
Okay.
Some of which, of course, turn into our portfolio. So,
yeah. So that's interesting. So let's talk about the wholesaling. So you're coming across deals all the time that you may want to keep as rentals, but I mean, you obviously can't keep them all, and maybe some of them don't fit into exactly what you want to do. So you just, when you come across a deal that you can't keep, you're just selling it to another investor.
It's more like the other way around. We probably look at and hold, we probably look at 200 houses, and out of 200 houses we look at, we probably wholesale 100 of them, forget the other 100, and maybe buy one for ourselves. That we can, you know, because a lot of people are really happy with deals that we wouldn't be happy with, you know, out-of-state people.
Right.
In particular.
Yeah, so, and that, you know, that's, so what advice would you give? Because that's always, I think, a fear of mine of buying out-of-state is that you don't, you're not going to get the deals that the local investors are going to get. So, like, so what advice could you give to an out-of-town investor that maybe is looking to buy, whether it's Indianapolis or somewhere else, to make sure that they don't get taken when they're buying a property?
Well, I know exactly one guy who's done it successfully, and he lives 1,100 miles from here, but he knows this city about as well as I do. Well, that's an exaggeration, but he spends a lot of time here. He knows the neighborhoods. He knows the people. I met him at a real estate meetup. We've spent a lot of time driving around, looking at places together. He's very good at getting to know people, getting to know the areas. He'll drive here and spend 2 weeks working on a property he's got. I just don't see how it really works very well to do it completely from a distance, unless you have the money to buy like A properties, you know, turn it over to management.
Yeah.
And you can accept that you're not going to make a huge return, but that eventually maybe you're going to get some appreciation.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
We're aiming for the opposite. We're not aiming for the worst property, but we got C and B properties, and those cash flow a whole lot better than the more expensive stuff. But yeah, you have to be here. You have to put sweat equity into it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really sure, you know, unless you are really connected, I think it's tough to buy if you're not in the actual city. So all right, so let's talk about when you buy a property. So you want your properties to be in really good shape. You tend to fix them up a little bit when you buy them, and then you continually improve them between tenants, right?
Well, the last few things we've bought have been very small. They've been two bedroom houses with an open basement and open attic. So it's easy to get in there and rewire it, replumb it, you know, everything that every light switch, every light fixture, every plumbing fixture, everything that moves and breaks is new.
Okay.
Because that's the stuff you're always hearing about. So no, we don't care about buying them in good shape, but we want them to be in good shape before we rent them. And then the ones that are older and that we haven't done that to, every time someone moves out, we'll go in and we'll pick a couple of things that we can upgrade. You know, we'll tear out a staircase and rebuild it and put up a railing, or, you know, replace all the toilets or something like that.
What, when you're buying a property, so it doesn't matter if that property is in good shape, you'll buy it if the numbers make sense, right? So you don't necessarily need a property that's run down. Can you give me like an example of maybe one of your recent deals, like what you paid for it and what you spent to fix it up?
Well, the last place we got was, we got this hoarder house, which we paid almost nothing for, like 11 grand. And it's in a nice little spot. It's good and improving. We're spending way more than we should to fix it up, but by the time we get done, we're probably going to have 50 grand.
55. Okay. So 50,
it's going to rent for 850 or 900 a month. So
okay. That's great.
That's pretty close to the 2% rule. That's not too bad. And that's, you know, we usually try to do better than that. I just, took a little more than we thought. The next thing we got after that was we haven't fixed it up yet. So I don't know what the costs are going to be, but we got a nice solid place for 20 grand in a right on the fringe of a very nice area. Again, the woman just wanted out, and if these places have a good roof, good gutters, new windows, decent siding, you know, the floors aren't sagging, you know, that's great. We can do all the rest.
That 11 to maybe 20, 30 grand, like that's kind of like your sweet spot in what you want to pay for a property.
That seems to be, these days, what we're finding. What we were getting was these like our package and a few others, were these huge duplexes in a very used to be genteel old neighborhood. Those are really priced out now. We don't want to buy there anymore. So we're moving out onto the east side of town where there are a lot of smaller places, you know, two bedroom singles, three bedroom bungalows. And that's what we're finding, 10, 20, 30 grand. But it's hard to find that. I wouldn't want anyone listening to think I'll just call someone in Indianapolis and get a house.
Right.
You know, like I said, we look at 100 houses to find one of those that's where we want to be for the price we want to pay.
Right.
And worth fixing up the way we want to fix it up and that we can get a tenant we'll like.
So, and how are the tenants that you've been getting? Are they... Have you had any problems with them, evictions or?
Oh, sure. Nobody with this many places is going to be exempt from problems.
Sure.
But, for the most part, they're great. We have, once Isaac took over managing all the stuff himself and doing the leasing himself and screening the tenants himself, a lot of our problems just ceased. Yeah, there's still occasionally someone who just does something they really should not do.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of turnover, or do a lot of your tenants, I know you've only been doing this for a few years here, but like, do you see a lot of turnover every year, or does it seem like your tenants tend to stay?
Not so much. They tend to, you know, they tend to hang around.
Okay. Awesome.
We try to keep up the maintenance and, you know, do what they ask, and
yeah,
the rents are reasonable, and we've had pretty good luck.
Okay. So now your son handles all of the day-to-day management, you know, if a tenant has an issue, but then will you go over and fix the problem when it comes up, or do you send a handyman over?
It depends. Sometimes I do.
Okay.
We have a great handyman who can do anything. And I think he likes those nuisance calls a lot more than I do. So if we're working together on one of our long rehabs and a call comes in, he'll usually go take care of it.
Leave me to
soldier on what I'm doing.
So now tell me more about your wholesaling. So this is something, you know, for anyone that's maybe looking to buy in Indianapolis, that this is something where maybe you could be a resource for them. Tell me how everything works with your wholesaling business.
Well, everybody kind of has to do the same things as everyone else is doing. And then you hope to find some other things to do. Everyone sends out a million postcards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the trick to that is finding a way to mine the data so you only send them to people who are, you know, potential sellers who have properties you might like to get. And that's where Sam comes in with his software and all those skills. But we also do a lot of stuff that I think not everybody is doing, just walking around and meeting people and, you know, I've made a couple of really good deals just sitting in a restaurant, overhearing people's conversations.
Wow.
And going and introducing myself. One of our most profitable wholesale deals came about like that. And of course now the kids expect me to do that every day.
And I've never done it again, right. Well, how can someone get in touch with you if they're interested in checking out your inventory or seeing what you have available? What's the best way for someone to reach you?
Our website is parrothomebuyers.com. That's parrot just like the bird. And you can call us at 317-202-1211.
Awesome. Well, if you missed that, I'll go ahead and put the phone number and the website on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com /episode 179. Well, Pete, thank you
Okay, we'd be glad to talk to anyone about their plans here, whether we can sell them something or not.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Pete. And thanks for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.